Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Here, Bird Show.
Hate to rock the boat this morning, but it's obvious that there are two groups of people that have been going at it now for years and years and years and just can't see each other's side. And we're talking about Gen Zs and millennials here. And we're only going to add to the tension this morning. Our producer, Rebecca, all yours.
Yeah, it's war because everybody nowadays is so into Y2K fashion. But is it really Y2K?
Do you guys remember where you were on Y2K the night that it was all supposed to end, man? And computers were going to turn on us.
I don't.
Yeah, I had my sippy cup. I was probably watching an episode of Blue's Clues before bed.
Y2K, so I was in college, but where? I don't remember where I was.
cool.
I remember very distinctly.
Okay.
I was in my neighbor, Miss Linda's house. We had a neighborhood New Year's party. I was there with my best friends, Lindsay and Lauren. Prince's 1999 song was playing, Party Like It's 1999.
Okay.
And I remember watching, because I catastrophized about this stuff, the end of the Mayan calendar. I prayed every night over that. Like, it freaked me out. And I remember watching the TV as it counted down to midnight. And I was like, it's doomsday.
This is it.
And then nothing happened. And I was like, okay. And I went and shot off some fireworks.
So me and my ex-wife, Stacy, joined 4 other friends. And we're like, if this is all going down, we're going to Mexico. So we booked a last minute like trip down to Mexico in Rosarito. We didn't have a whole bunch of money at the time. And we all shared a condo. And the only thing I remember about the weekend, except for us waiting for the world to end, was the shower in the master bedroom was tiled, right? And it was tiled with a woman with huge boobs that was touching herself. That's how they tiled. That's how cheap this place was.
And that's what you remember.
That's what you remember.
Like, yeah, I booked that one. Yeah. But yeah, we were all around a fire pit at like midnight going, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen now.
Well, I was 6, which is why I kind of consider myself a zillennial, which I know is like really cringy, especially to like Katie's 30 years old. I can see her talking right now through the glass. She hates it when I call myself a zillennial because she's my age too.
Don't do that to us. Millennials.
Okay. We're basically on the cusp of being millennials and Gen Z.
Okay. So the basic difference, if you have to wrap it up, what do Gen Z say about millennials and what do millennials say about Gen Zs?
Gen Z seems to think that millennials are very cringy. Like, there's a name for it. You get called choogy. That's like the worst thing you can be called as a millennial is choogy. Have you heard? You know that?
Oh, yeah, we've talked about it.
And then millennials just think that, like, they think what every older generation thinks of a younger generation, that they're rude and they're weird and annoying and like they're just out of touch.
Right. Challenge. There is a subset maybe of elder millennials because I too am almost a cusper, but not with Gen Z. We had such high hope. We were like, we wanted to be Gen Z's older sibling. We were like, you got this. You're going to change the world. So excited. And then they started eating Tide Pods and getting on to us about how our hair was parted and if we were wearing skinny jeans. So now I think there is a subset of millennials that likes Gen Z and believes in them. And the other subset is like, you are boomers part two. Mm. You are mean to us for no reason. We're just existing here being dog moms and plant moms and wearing our skinny jeans. And y'all are hating for nothing.
Gen Zers are so afraid to be millennials. That's where the real divide is. They are so afraid to come off corny and old and choogy.
That's why every time I see one of their bratty little videos on TikTok where they make fun of millennials, I make sure to comment, oh, I thought you were me. I thought you were one of us. Because nothing drives them nuts more than a Gen Z looking like a millennial.
So I bring up this strong generational divide because Netflix just released the horror movie Time Cut, where the main character is sent from the present all the way back to 2003, and the trailer got torn to shreds online by millennials because everything in it is so wrong. The colors are wrong. The accessories are wrong. The gadgets are wrong. And I don't know who made the movie, but something I do know is that even though Gen Z is really into recycling the old trends, mm-hmm. they wouldn't know real Y2K if they got hit in the head with a purple UGG boot.
Don't they normally have somebody on set who is solely responsible right. for making sure things are accurate mm-hmm. from that time period?
I'd like to talk to that producer because they were wrong.
I watched that movie and I literally gaslit myself. I was like, I don't remember any of this because that was right around when I was in high school. Mm-hmm. And I was like, no one at my school looked like that with all the bright colors. No one's bedroom looked like that. Mm-hmm. It's like almost a cartoon version of what you would expect a Y2K bedroom to look like, but it's not reality.
It feels like a Gen Z's idea yes. of what like the early 2000s were. So I invited intern Ethan in studio to take a little generational quiz because I want to see if he can recognize which of these outfits are real things I actually wore in 2007 and which I made up.
Okay.
So how old are you, Ethan?
I am 20.
20. Yes. What year does that make you born?
2004.
I didn't go to school for math.
The math isn't that tough on that one.
Really?
It's around
20
years ago.
It's 2024. He is 20, so you subtract 20 from 24.
Yep, you are not listening to NPR.
He is so young. When I saw this was a time travel movie and they went back to 2003, I wept because I was like, that is literally yesterday. Ethan is so young, he wasn't even alive for the time period of this movie.
20 years old. Okay.
Well, to make this quiz fair, I think it is important to note that growing up, I was a scene girl. Do y'all know what a scene girl is?
You had the bangs?
I looked like this.
Oh my God.
Oh, wow. Oh, no.
This is not a picture of me, but this was the goal. It's ratted hair, raccoon stripes, eyeliner, like up to here. Like, this was my team.
It looks like emo Jersey Shore.
It does.
Is it Brett Dolish?
No. Oh, my God. Did you walk around being like, is it more than you bargained for yet?
Yes, of course I did.
Your entire playlist is just Evanescence on repeat.
Panic at the Disco, that's all I listen to. Okay, let's travel back to 2007 when I was 13 years old.
I'm proud of you for doing the math.
I went to art school, okay? I can't do math. Ethan, it's the first day of eighth grade, and you want to make a fashion statement. What outfit do you lay out the night before? A, a denim mini skirt over a pair of black leggings layered with two different lace-trimmed tank tops and a polo. Or B, an oversized graphic tee with a cartoon dinosaur saying rawr, paired with rhinestone bedazzled low-rise flare jeans.
I feel like oversized tee is not the answer because it's just like so modern-ish and so old also at the same time. Mm. So I got to go with the first answer.
You're correct.
Okay. Yeah, you got a layer.
Wow. You're in those lacy tanks. Oh, okay. That was the look.
I had so many of those. So many.
I loved those. I can't believe you got, the oversized graphic tee. You never wore oversized. Mm-mm. It was glued to your body. All right, you're trying out for the JV girls soccer team. There's a get together with the high school girls and you want to make a good impression. Do you wear A pair of teal Sophie shorts with the waistband rolled up three times because you're not like other girls? Or if you laugh every time, you're
thanks.
Or B, a knockoff Juicy Couture velour jumpsuit that says angel on the butt.
I'm going to go with the first option just because of the reaction.
Smart man.
Everybody in here was laughing. Oh,
that's correct. Yeah. What? I'm not going to wear a knockoff Juicy Couture. What am I, poor?
Bro, people should never laugh.
All right. Here's my final one. You're going to see this cool new underground band that's making a stop on their tour at Six Flags Over Georgia. They're called the Jonas Brothers.
That actually happened.
Yeah, it did. Your team, Joe, what do you wear to make him look your way? A boho patchwork poncho that covers your torso, along with a charm headband that has acrylic peace signs. Or B, a long, skinny purple scarf in the middle of July with a pair of fake diamante chandelier earrings that hit your collarbone.
The scarf in the middle of July.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, because Kristen's over here laughing her ass.
She's giving away every single one of them.
I'm just literally reliving every single poor fashion choice we made in the early 2000s. And they were atrocious. Dude, the dresses over the jeans, what were we thinking?
Yo, what was that era?
We weren't thinking. That's the problem, Kristen.
So what is this era going to look back in 20 years and go, what were we thinking?
Oh, the high-waisted pants, for sure.
The mom jeans. Jinx.
Crocs.
No! You nailed it!
It's the Burt Show.
Our audio producer, Kaylee, is more annoyed than usual this morning. It has to do with your kids and social media handles?
Yeah, well, I got into this conversation with my wife the other night because she was saying that she feels like most celebrities these days, or, I mean, it could be more than celebrities, probably already reserve their social media handles for their kids before they're born.
Like, that's probably smart, right?
I mean,
I guess.
As soon
as you know what you're going to name your child, then you reserve that.
Right. I mean, I feel like that's annoying. You should have to, like, you know, come up with a good handle. Like, I mean, at least have to like think about it. I mean, most people can't reserve their name because it's already taken. So you got to come up with some clever way to create one. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. But then we started kind of having a bigger conversation and it was like, okay, what about, you know, because I have some friends whose their kids already have social media handles and a phone. And it's like, and some of the kids have even gotten in trouble.
Sure.
And then I went down this like wormhole online and I came across this word. And I hate the word because it reminds me of sharding. It's sharenting. Have you ever heard of sharenting? I guess it's when...
like takes a village kind of...
No, not at all. It's more or less parents who, you know, like create, like share their kids' like pictures online. Even like they'll have like a handle already for their kids and they'll be sharing photos of their kids on their kids' handles.
I don't have, Jimmy doesn't have his own Instagram because I made the decision to share him publicly until he's like, hey mom, I don't want you posting my pictures anymore, which of course I will, but right now he's good for the gram, so it's going to happen.
Right, right.
But so yeah, no, I share it that way. But I do have friends who have created profiles. However, they're private and they do it for close family and friends.
That one's dangerous. That's dangerous, that close family and friends one.
No. Not in the Insta story, close family friends. They have an actual Instagram handle, like a profile for their kids, but it's set to private. So only family and friends can like that profile so they can post photos there so people can keep up with their
kids. What's dangerous about...
Just what she's talking about is you going back and forth. You can have like public friends on Instagram, but then you have a separate bunch of close friends.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the people that only see certain pictures. And if you mess that up, you could share more in your life to a more general public than your close friends.
Like,
let's say some of your jokes are dark, your close friends get you, right? Mm-hmm. So they'll laugh about it. But if it wasn't on your close friends and the general public saw it, they'd be like, oh my God!
And then your employer's like, what?
Yeah. But what you're talking about is different.
Right, yeah. And then it was like, and I guess like the whole sharenting thing was more towards like these like vlogger YouTube families that like share like their whole family. They make like they're like episodes.
Right.
It's like episodic. And then
they're
started
trying to make a living, man. There's a lot of
money. I wish they were doing it.
Yeah.
But I mean, and then I'm like, well, am I a bad parent? Because my kids love watching that garbage. Mm-hmm. It's just garbage.
It's infuriating.
It is infuriating.
That little kid that opens up presents on YouTube.
Well, he's not a little kid anymore. I think he hit puberty and now he's like ugly and he's just
So Forbes just came out with their top 50 influencers, and that Ryan kid who now is like whatever 15 or 16 made something like $35 million last year. I just saw this list yesterday.
Damn. Yeah, well, I mean, we all know the tragic endings for some of those, you know, families. I mean, they're all jacked up. And I mean, everyone's family's a little jacked up anyway. But I hate letting my kids watch YouTube Kids, because they can access kind of all that same junk. But
you have control over it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I do.
So this has actually become like a huge thing. And of course, I'm all up in like the mommy algorithm or whatever. But like the people that actually do like a family vlog, right? They use their I don't want to say use your kids, but your kids are actively participating, whether you're forcing them to or not. They're starting to like crack down and create laws
So just this past August, Illinois became the first state to pass a law that would ensure financial compensation for minors defined as children under 16. So if your kids are getting featured in your vlogs, they are entitled to financial compensation as you're
should.
Using them.
I think that's the probably least of a parent, should be the least of a parent's concern is the financial split on the whole thing. I think emotionally, the kid feeling used.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to be on, quote unquote, all the time. That's got to be exhausting for a 5 or 6 or a 7 year old.
Well, yeah, I think I came on here and told you that, you know, my son and his friends kind of like did a workaround in creating their own little YouTube channel under like one of the other kids' parents, which I wasn't, you know, whatever. But I mean, but having your kid grow up and then be dependent on like their self-worth based on how many likes and how many views. To me, is just a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, and I think that's happening already. I mean, it doesn't matter if it's a family project or not. I can go off on this and sound like a super old guy about when it comes to social media and kids and the value and depression levels rising over the course of the last 10 years. And I think we got to figure out exactly why that's happening. And I think it does have a lot to do with social media and cocooning and comparing themselves to other friends. There was a time back in the day that when our popularity contest was just our school. Am I popular in my school? Now your likes have nothing to do with your school. It has to do with all schools, and you're comparing yourself to everybody else that's your age also, and there's a lot of pressure there, man.
Yeah, people you've never met, people you don't know. It's just like, it's their self-worth's based on...
It is a different world for kids growing up than it was for us growing up. The pressures are different, and I put a lot of it on social media.
Yeah, I mean, social media was tough enough when I was getting started, but I look at what they have to deal with now, and it kind of just feels like it's the wild, wild west. So I think until people start cracking down, and I think it falls on the parents, it's going to be really tough for these kids as they grow up.
Yep. It's the Burt Show.
This is the Burt Show.
All right, so it's not very often that we get an email that we look at and all of our jaws just drop. In this one, it has to do with a Burt Show listener selling a house and a racist neighbor. So we brought Katie in on this also. And let me read this for you guys. Hey, Burt Show, I need some advice. My husband and I are selling our home and 3-acre property in a somewhat rural area. While our neighbors aren't super close, my driveway is shared with my neighbor. Little backstory, my neighbor used to own our house. He sold us the main house years ago and turned the pool house into his home. He owns the property, pasture, behind our house, and his son lives to the left of us. In other words, he owns about 20 acres with the exception of the 3 acres we're on. We're currently under contract. Here's my dilemma. We were outside one day, and my neighbor came over and said he hated to see us go. Then he casually said, I don't care who you have moving in here, but it better not be that word, the N word, I'm assuming, right? The hairs on the back of my neck stood up. I was enraged. We have cameras on our property, so I happen to know the people who are buying our house are black. I want to give them their earnest money back and break the contract. I do not feel good about letting them continue with the purchase knowing how my neighbor feels. My husband seems to think there could be some kind of legal ramification for us if we terminate the contract based on ethnicity. He seems to think this is a prime example of no good deed goes unpunished. So what should I do? It feels so wrong selling my house to people knowing my neighbor referred to them as the N-word. Mo, Katie, if this were you, how would you want this handled? Thanks in advance for any insight. Respectfully, scared to sell. And if you guys got any advice, 1-855-BIRD-SHOW. If you're in this field, real estate, law, man, I'd love to get some takes on this. But how do you guys feel about it?
If it were me, I would appreciate the honesty. I mean, the neighbor is racist. There's really not much you can do about that. A racist will be a racist. So at the end of the day, I wouldn't want you to terminate the contract based on this information without giving me this information. So I think the best thing to do in a situation like this is just be forthcoming and tell me and my wife or whomever I'm moving in with what the situation is, what you heard, what you experienced, and then give us an opportunity to make that decision with that information.
Because I feel like you're punishing the black couple who wants to buy the house because your neighbor is racist. It's not fair that you terminate the contract you have with them because your neighbor is racist. Now, giving them that, they need to know like what they're getting themselves into and let them make that decision. But I feel punishing them because your neighbor is a racist a-hole just doesn't seem fair.
Exactly. I think the option should be given.
Yeah.
And then go from there. Let them know, hey, because it's a bad scenario all around. This guy used to own that property in that house. And if he doesn't want them there, he's going to make their like life a living hell. So give them the option instead of just terminating it without telling them all the details.
Kaylee wants in on this. What you got, dude?
Yeah, so I've had my real estate license. I got my broker's license. And I know that the person selling isn't the racist, but you can't not sell to somebody because of their ethnicity and because of their color. He could get sued for that.
But I there's nothing wrong with him going, hey, I just want to let you know,
right, yeah,
buyer, I found this out. So now the purchase of the home is in your hands. If you want to break contract, I'm totally down.
True. Yeah. I mean, that's how I would go about it.
Yep.
Yeah, because if you make that decision for them, you're taking their autonomy away. Like, they're adults. They're allowed, capable of making decisions themselves. I think the best thing to do and the kindest thing to do would be, like, tell them what's up and say, if you want to break contract, we will give you your earnest money back. And that way they can make the decision. You're still helping them out by refunding them the money. Like, it's a let them do it. They're adults. Mm-hmm.
All right. So you made a promise, Mo. Moving on. In your men's group that you are not sure that you can hold now?
That's exactly that. I'm not sure.
Okay.
I think it's one of those situations where as a guy, it sounds good at first when you talk to your male friends about how men are not always vocal and vulnerable with each other. And we don't necessarily tell each other when we need help. But then when you do get a male friend come to you for help, you realize that it was probably a bad idea to ask him to do that.
Right.
And that's kind
you
of
panic?
Where I am. I'm very much in a panic right now. And it's because a few months back, me and three of my friends, it's four of us, we all live in different states. We're all at different places in our lives. But there was a point in our 20s when me and these guys were so close that we saw each other all the time. We spoke all the time. We always knew what was going on with each other's lives. And then obviously you get older, you get lives of your own, things change. And at some point, we were going months without speaking to each other. So one of us came up with the idea that we would try, when it started in the pandemic, that we would try to Zoom each other at least once a week just to check in with each other and see if there's anything that the group can do for any individual in the group. Once a week turned out to be entirely too much. That didn't work. But we did stick to once a month. So for like the last 6 or 7 months, every month we Zoom with each other and we try to force each other to be genuinely vulnerable about whatever you can use your guy's help or advice on.
And you, hopefully you have like a flat rule that you can't make fun of anybody. This is not one of those times where you can like make light of stuff or like goad each other or make fun of each other.
Well, we do have a rule, but the rule is you have to make fun of each other.
Yeah. Oh, seriously?
That's the way it works.
Dudes are different. Yes. Yeah, dudes are different. That's the way we show love.
Yes. Like, you're going to get it. We're going to help you, but you're going to get these jokes first.
Yeah.
Except in this case, because it was so serious that I think we were all kind of like, okay, we might need a woman. Like, I don't know. I don't know if we can do this as guys. And I genuinely realized, as much as we were joking about it, I don't think I've ever once gone to any of my male friends with like a serious problem. I don't think any of us have ever done that with each other. Mm. It's always been something that you can joke about. And then I think this particular time, it was something that we weren't prepared for because it's something that we don't feel comfortable joking about.
Question. I know this might sound weird. Is your group made up of other black men?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, no, it's one white guy, three black men.
Okay. Because I'm in a men's group and it's all white dudes and we got no problem like dumping on each other. No problem.
And it's the same.
Okay.
It's pretty much. And we've all known each other since college. I mean, so we're all very, very close. The thing is, there's one guy in our group who is very, like, believe this or not, he's more introverted than me. Like, this is the only person I've ever met in my life that's way more introverted than me. He'll go 3 to 5 months not speaking to any of us, and none of us panic. We just know that's just him.
Mm-hmm.
He goes into his zone. You won't hear from him. And when he pops back up, it's like nothing ever happened. It's like he was never gone. So typically, in these groups, it's usually 90% of the time joking. Maybe somebody has something going on in their life, and usually you just really need to vent. That's mostly what it is. You just need your dudes to listen, and then we joke about it. That's how we get through it. So we were completely unprepared for him, especially him, as the guy in the group who is never vulnerable, never wants to speak about his issues, actually coming to the table with like a genuine concern. And immediately, as we got on the Zoom, we knew something was off. I mean, he's the biggest jokester of all of us, and he just wasn't joking. He was kind of just sitting there quiet, letting everybody speak. And then one of my other friends asked the question that started it all, which was, how are you doing with this new girl? Because he's been dating, and he's been excited about the woman that he's dating, and they've been dating for a few months. And he was like, well, we're not speaking. So, like, what happened? And he says that she goes on a lot of business trips, and he doesn't think much of it, but now he's starting to feel like she might be lying. And the reason is, she did say that she was going on a business trip. She did say that there was going to be some guys there. It's like a group of them, I guess, who all work together. But she never mentioned in the entire time about any one-on-one meetings or dinners with another guy, in which we were trying to figure out, if is that even something that you should mention? Like, if you know that within this work group that you're going out with, that there is a particular employee that's of the opposite sex that you may be closer to than everyone else in the group, and you know that you might end up one-on-one with them at a dinner as opposed to as a group, is that something that you have to mention to your significant other? He felt like it was. Like, that's something that he should have known. And so she accidentally FaceTimed him while she was out at the dinner, and he immediately realized that she was only talking to one other guy. So I don't think she realized she FaceTimed him at first, so he listened. And nothing was really said that was, like, smoking gun. Like, okay, I know something is going on. It was normal conversation. But just the fact alone that she was there one-on-one with this guy, and she presented the information as if it was always a group setting, has him feeling like that's enough reason to not trust her. Whereas to her thing is, it really wasn't that big of a deal. I didn't think I needed to tell you that it was only two of us because everybody else had already left.
Well, would she have done that if it was a woman? And then she went one-on-one with a woman to dinner?
Would she have mentioned it?
Yeah.
That's a good point, because that also came up. And no, she wouldn't have said anything about it at all. And I don't think he would have felt like she had to.
Yeah.
Here's where I'm a little confused. So it was a group setting, then everybody peeled off and they were alone.
Right. That's her story.
Okay.
Not that just the two of them went out to dinner by themselves.
Right.
Because those are two different things.
They are two very different things.
If she's being honest and everybody peeled off and they were just there hanging out, I don't think you need to tell him, hey, I'm with a dude right now and everybody else left. But if they went out one-on-one, I think that's something you got to say, right?
Yeah. For me, this is an absolute deal breaker. So I had a friend like this that over a period of time, she was constantly telling me so many different, not even lies, but so many just like bent truths that I just knew that I could never really trust the things that she was telling me. And honestly, it built up a lot of resentment in me, because I never really felt like the stories that she was telling me were actually true. Cause I would always feel like I would have to have follow-up questions like, oh, well, what do you mean by that? Or what actually happened? So honestly, like, if I'm in his position, this would be enough for me to end it, because I would never feel like I would be getting the full truth, because I feel like you can't trust me with what you say is actually going on.
And that was kind of my advice to him. I'm like, regardless of what we tell you, if you know she's going to continue to go on these business trips, and if you're already at a place where you don't trust it and you don't trust her, you're going to have to continue to deal with that. And I feel like it's going to always be an issue for him. So he's kind of at a crossroads on how to handle that.
You're on The Burt Show.
Is it just as offensive for your significant other to try to, quote unquote, fatten you up, pull a little weight on you, as it is to say, hey, you know what? Maybe it's time for us to hit the gym a little bit. It's the same thing, because our producer Mikey is going through this right now.
Yeah, you know what? I'm living high on the horse, mister. I'm doing good.
Isn't it high on the hog?
High on the hog, baby.
I think Mikey's just high.
All right, here's the deals. That my girlfriend about 6 months ago discovered a passion for cooking.
Mm-hmm.
And that's great news for me. All I've eaten is fast food for 20 years. And now I'm eating right. I'm eating good. But just recently, I've come to realize, I have a theory. I think that she didn't discover a passion for cooking. She discovered a passion for trying to shape me into a better man.
Put a little meat on your bones?
Yeah, put a little meat on my bones. So I've always been a weird alien Twiggy looking thing. like my dad always said that I had SCLS, which is skinny chicken leg syndrome.
You're a little bit like the shape of that airy balloon you see out for car dealerships.
I'm a wacky waving inflatable arm tube man. Yeah. So yeah, I've been eating like nobody's business. I have a list of things that she's been making me.
Okay.
Tell me when to stop. All right, ready? Mm-hmm. Chicken shrimp Alfredo. Marry me chicken pasta. That one was a trick. mac and cheese, creamy Parmesan chicken and rice, Mongolian beef, meatballs, crispy chicken breast with lemon, garlic, orzo, salmon bowl, steak quesadilla, wings, steak, burgers.
Wow.
She's feeding me 2 to 3 times a day. And that's like a full-time job.
Yeah,
it's like you're a baby.
Yeah. Or like a 4-H animal.
Yeah.
That's about to be shown over the weekend.
So every morning it's breakfast burritos, bacon, eggs on a tortilla. Get to lunchtime, she'll make me a grilled cheese, something good. Nighttime, that's the big one. She can't eat anything. So like 2 nights ago, she made us burgers. She made me 2, her 1. She took 2 bites of her burger. And then it was up to me to eat the rest. So I had 3 burgers.
She doesn't like her cooking, or she just gets full quick, or what?
I think she just wants me to have more food.
Okay. So you're taking this personally. Like, she's trying to fat me up here.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I think she's trying to shape me into something I'm not. Oh, yeah. But also my pants aren't fitting right anymore. This has never happened in my whole life. I walked out of here the other day, and I couldn't button my top button. I spent the whole day with my button undone.
It happens.
So,
have you addressed this with her and said, I'm putting weight on. Are you okay with this? Or do you think this is calculated because she doesn't like all that?
It's all. Yeah. No, we're not talking about it, but mm-hmm. It's all implied. I know what she's up to. Mm-hmm. I'm not mad at it, but
you know, you don't have to eat it.
It's amazing. I can't not.
Yeah, I get that part.
That's good.
But it's definitely strategic, sure.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm starting to believe everything that a woman does is strategic. They are so far in front of us.
I think so.
Every now and then I will come across a video on Instagram that just speaks to my soul, will become some sort of mantra, and I'm hoping that's what Monday mantras on The Burt Show can be for you, that you're going through something and you need to hear a specific message, and lo and behold, a member of The Burt Show has that message that you need to hear. So we're going to start doing some Monday mantras. And today, Abby and Mo are bringing in theirs.
So mine, when I saw this video, it was timely. It was right on time for me mm-hmm. because I think a lot of people go through these moments in life where you just don't feel like yourself, and you just don't, maybe, you know, you may not even know exactly what it is, but I think sometimes you get so caught up in the everyday grind of life that you forget to count your blessings. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you just need to be reminded of how grateful you actually are. And Steve Harvey, in his clip on Black Billions Club, talks about in those moments how you should stop and then actually think about the things that you should be grateful for. And it could end up changing your entire mood.
If you wake up in the morning, you start having negative thoughts. Man, this ain't my day. I woke up on the wrong side of bed. I'm tripping. I just don't feel myself. Every time you feel in the middle of the day, if you feel yourself doing that, stop. Just stop for a second and start going over in your mind everything you have to be grateful for. Not everything you want. Everything you already have. Because what you have is substantial. You just haven't gone over the list and taken inventory in a long time. But the fact that you can walk, that's a blessing. The fact that you woke up, that's another blessing. The fact that you can see, think, reason, that's another blessing. The fact that you can go somewhere and get yourself something to eat, that's another blessing. The fact that you can go and turn the key and call someplace home, that's another blessing. The ability to dream is a blessing. The fact that you have an opportunity to get it right is another blessing. The fact that you're beautiful, that's another blessing. The fact that you have any measure of health, that's another blessing. And I'm just talking to you, I don't even know you. I could give you 50 things you ought to be grateful for right now. I don't even know you.
thought that was powerful. Because, you know, you can forget. It's very easy to forget all of the things that you have in your life that you should be grateful for. And I think it's a good reminder every once in a while.
Can really get caught up in the stuff, the mundane stuff every single day. You're stuck in traffic. Oh, it's Monday. It's stuck in traffic. But when you think about it, just the fact you have a car and the ability and you have a job to go to that is putting you in that traffic is a really great point.
It's also it's important to remember that, man. And in smallest things, like that's what kind of got me about that video of him saying you can walk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know what I mean? You can you have the ability to go get something to eat today. Like these things, we don't think about it. As they say, health is like a crown that only the unhealthy can see.
Ooh, that is the truth, man.
Yeah.
I was in Colorado last week, and you go to Colorado to be in the mountains, right? And Amanda and I went up onto a mountain, and there was a woman there in a wheelchair, and she was working her way up to this ride that they've put on the mountain in Vail, and this guy started helping her out before I could get my hands on her. He started helping her out, and he pushes her up the mountain. And she said to him, she goes, "It's so hard to live life the way you want to when you're in a wheelchair." And he totally embraced her and said, "I will take you anywhere you want to go, man." But it really made me realize what you just said.
Yeah, you got to be grateful for the smallest of things in life. And usually that'll help change your mood if you ever find yourself in a dark place.
All right, Abby, you're up.
That's hard to follow up.
That's not a competition.
That feels like one. Mine's better. No, I'm just kidding. Mine is for the people who have big emotions. And I think as an adult, I've become someone who has muted their emotions as like a survival tactic. So this isn't quite my mantra yet, but I'm setting it up. So let me cook here. So on TikTok, there's this life coach. Her name is at Life Coach Connie. And she gave an apology to anyone who's ever felt like they had to become hard in life in order to dim down their emotions. She gave an apology for anyone who feels like they've had to make their emotions smaller to fit into the world.
Baby, it is that deep for you. It is that deep for you, and that's okay. It's okay that you feel things so deeply. It is okay that things land so hard for you, and I'm sorry. I'm sorry that you are surrounded by people who don't know how to hold your softness. I'm sorry that you're surrounded by people who don't know how to hold your tenderness. I'm sorry that you are surrounded by people who invalidate just how big and soft and mushy you are. And it is that deep, and I want you to lean into that depth of the way that you feel life. It is that deep for you, and that's okay.
So for me, I feel like I have definitely become that person who has like let that softness go as a way to make it through life. I think I was surrounded by the people that thrived and the people that were on top in life were really cold, and I guess had this fierceness to them and like a badassery that I was like, oh, I'm not naturally like that. Like I am like just like a big marshmallow. So I think as a way to like make it through life, I've become very cold. And so I saw this quote that I actually reposted to my Instagram story yesterday. It said, "Destroy the idea that you have to be cold and emotionally detached in order to be strong." And I am trying to reframe my way of thinking of realizing the people that are actually strong aren't the people that have the cold defense mechanism. It's the people who are strong enough to still be warm in despite of people tearing down their softness.
That's a fact.
I love that so much. And I am so adamant now. You just see things so differently when you become a parent, and emotions is one of them. And I think this new generation of parenting, we really are trying to get our kids to embrace their emotions and not to dismiss them, but learn how to deal with them. So having a son, and I want to make sure I'm like, it's okay to have big feelings. It's okay to have big emotions. We need to acknowledge what we're feeling. We just have to find better ways of dealing with what we are feeling. And so that's why anytime he gets upset, I'm like, all right, are we sad? Are we mad? Like what, like can you, and then can we talk about it? And all right, so a better way to deal with this, how about we, and you give them like some coping, because I think so often as kids, we were just kind of like, we were dismissed. Mm-hmm. Those feelings, because you're just a kid and you got to get over it. And I think at such a young age, you're going to see a lot more emotionally involved people, hopefully, coming out of this new generation of parenting.
Yeah, I'll be dead by then, but good for them.
Oh, there's that hardness.
The Bert Show.